Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Thursday evening. I think it's actually Friday morning on the East Coast, which is where Tim Bontemps went to the Golden State Warriors-New York Knicks game at Madison Square Garden tonight, won by the Warriors. They won their seventh consecutive road game. Mr. Bontemps, hello.
Everybody on the pod's a winner today.
Really?
My co-hosts get to tell me that they're right, and I get out of doing extra work. Big wins all around.
We were not going to bring it up because we have respect for you.
No, we don't.
Oh, that's 100% incorrect.
You brought it up.
Yeah, I brought it up because I brought it up preemptively. It's a preemptive strike.
I wasn't.
And again, as I'm happy, wins all around. Less work.
We were not going to do that.
And congratulations.
Joining us from Dallas, Texas is Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. I was definitely going to bring it up. I was definitely going to rub your face in it. And I definitely will in the very near future here.
All right. Well, on Thursday night, we got our third Spurs-Thunder game of the season. Actually, the fourth, because I'm going to always remember the preseason game when I might have invoked...
Where the discovery was partially made
when
after the earlier discoveries.
When I might have invoked Magic Johnson and Larry Bird talking about Wembanyama.
Might have.
The challenge for the first two games of this little series was that the Thunder won both games by 30 points. But Victor Wembanyama put on an absolute display in a great back and forth with Chet Holmgren, you know, on Thursday. It was in San Antonio, the Spurs' first game back since their rodeo road trip ended. I just believe there's not going to be too many times in the coming future where these two guys are going to play where it's not going to be on national TV. There were some terrific sequences in that game. Chet and Victor spent a lot of time guarding each other, probably more than they did the first two times, although I don't have data on that. It felt like it. Watching some of it back, I was at the first half of the Wizards Lakers game, so I didn't get to see it live, but I watched some of it back, and it felt like they were on each other a lot. Look, Chet had a great game. He had 23 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, and a block. But Victor Wembanyama, who has been just increasingly spectacular over the last few weeks and, you know, is just starting to threatening to put up 5x5 games left and right. He's putting up 5x4 games regularly, which he has done, which he did again in this one with, 28 points, 13 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals, and 5 blocks. He made 5 three-pointers, 3 of them in the fourth quarter. There was some sequences in this game, guys. I know you guys have watched them, that just gives you the future for Victor, where he would hit a 3 at one end, come down, get a block at the other, challenge a shot at the rim, come down, pass to a teammate for a shot. Just absolutely the stuff that the dreams are made of with Victor. The Spurs are a very bad team. It irritates Victor rather clearly that they're such a bad team. It's hard to get into Victor because the team is so bad and so many of his performances come in games that are not close, but it's an absolute just incredible thing to watch this guy get better. And it's really awesome to watch him play against Chet, where they completely dazzle with their ability to mix the size and skill. And by the way, the Thunder had won 6 consecutive games coming into this one by double digits. 6-game winning streak, all by double digits. They were red hot coming into this game. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander scored over 30, which he does every night. Mm-hmm. Jalen Williams, J-Dub, had an excellent game. It wasn't like they had a night where they shot, 31% and, packed it in. Like, it was a real game. They played hard. And I know you were able to watch it live, McMahon, and you were really active on the group chat about what you were seeing.
It's awesome. It is an awesome budding rivalry between two rising stars in this league who I believe they respect each other. They don't like each other. You know, they fist bump at the beginning of the games and then they go at each other's throat. And I love the fact that they don't want to be all buddy-buddy. You know, they want to one-up each other. They both had some great moments in this game. I mean, Chet had some moves where he went right at Wimby. There's one where it goes at him off the dribble, you know, into a spin move, into a little up and under, scores on him. You know, he had another one where Wimby's closing out on him and he drives and dunks. That was to pull within 3 with, like, I don't know, 4 minutes left or so. And then Wimby just took the game over from there. And the sequence that I think just locked up rookie of the year for Wemby was when he comes down and hits about a 27-footer to that was a dagger to put the Spurs up 9 with not a lot of time left. And then the next possession, Chet's trying to go ISO, and he's deep in his bag, you know, between the legs, behind the backs, you know, step back, and Wemby just snuffed that shot, just snatched it out of the air. It's a stuff, a rebound, all in one motion. Chet ends up on his butt. That's ball game. And again, this is not a Wemby. There's a mute button there.
Did you see how he reacted when he did that? You know, because it was like such a moment, and it was against Chet. Mm-hmm. Like Victor looked over to the bench and like, you know, gave like a little celebration.
Oh yeah.
They really, really, really don't want to make this about each other. Both of them feel the same way, but there's no avoiding it. It's about each other.
Period. And they're competitors, and it's awesome. You know, it's not like they're out there like cheap shotting each other. I mean, everything is clean competition, but it is fierce competition. That goes back to, like you said, we can talk about the preseason game. It goes back to the under-19 Team USA versus France meeting and what happened in the hallway after that preseason game. Wendy?
Yeah, I don't want to go over that again. It'll go irritating.
No, we do not. Well, it's just, we have talked about that enough.
I'm just saying.
We know the story.
There's some intensity there.
Yes.
And it, like, you know, Jackson just dropped in the chat here. This is the first time in NBA history that somebody's had 25 points, 10 rebounds, 5 blocks, 5 assists, and 5 made threes. I think we're going to look up in a few years and Wemby's going to have like 25 or 30 of those games. And the 3-point shooting's really come along for him. He was 5 of 7 tonight. One of the misses was like, okay, dude, you're being a little aggressive. He had Chet in his face and you try to do this like sidestep, deep step back type thing. And it's just like, okay, relax. And there were times where honestly Chet was over dribbling because you could tell they really want to go at each other. And it's funny. I think if you look at the last decade, maybe even going all the way back to LeBron, Chet might have been rookie of the year every single season with the exception of Luka and this year. Certainly over the last decade, Chet would have been rookie of the year, I think, every year except the year Luka won it until this year. That is how good he is to be an efficient 18-point-per-game dominant rim protector for a team that their chances to win the West regular season number one seed took a pretty major hit tonight, but is right in the thick of things. Like, Chet is awesome. But, man, Wemby is living up to historic hype right now.
Chet would have beat Luka too. Like, I don't – I mean, you could say that because you're in Dallas. The reason why Chet is not going to win this year, like, even now, like, even after all this, like, this month, right? I'm looking at the numbers now. So, Victor, in the month of February, obviously they went 2-10, set that aside. Individual numbers, 21 points a game, 47% shooting, 41% three on 5 attempts a game. 83 from the line, 10.7 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 3.9 blocks, 2 steals, a little under 4 turnovers a game. Obviously, crazy line, right? Here's Chet's line in the month of February. 19 points a game, 59% shooting from the field.
Jesus.
45% shooting from 3 on 5.5 attempts a game. God, 84% from the foul line, 8.4 rebounds, 2.7 assists, 1.6 turnovers, 2.7 blocks, 1 steal.
Jeez, oh man.
I mean, these guys are ridiculous. Yes,
the reason I've been talking about Chet the way I have all year, and like, look, Victor's going to win him rookie of the year. I agree with you. Like, this moment today, the 5x5 the other day, like the way he's played this last month with these sensational performances, he's going to win rookie of the year because those are the things that people are going to, and I don't mean that in a negative sense. Like, this is a narrative award as much as the MVP is a narrative award. And when you think about this season, like you said, McMahon, it's about Victor coming over here and playing to this level.
Yeah, but that's not why he's going to win.
Well, no.
We don't have to talk about the rookie of the year. We can just talk about how well they're playing.
No, I'm agreeing with you. I'm going back to McMahon's point about Luka Doncic. Like, Luka had a great rookie year. This guy, Chet Holmgren, is having an unbelievable rookie year on a team that very well might be the best team in the Western Conference. The only reason he's not going to win this year is because this guy, Victor Wembanyama, is doing stuff we've just never seen before, ever.
Yeah.
Like, Luka came in and had triple doubles and was great. And obviously he had a great career in Europe. And like, We all thought he was going to be great, and he was great. But Victor is doing stuff.
He was a third pick in a draft, so two teams clearly didn't think he was going to be that great.
We don't need to relitigate why he didn't go first when he pick. Yeah, we don't need to relitigate why he didn't go first when he obviously should have. Well, we'll set all that aside. But Victor has shown up and is doing, like, he's just doing stuff. We don't, like you said, the 5x5 thing. He may have 35 by fives by the end of his career. This is something that happens once every couple of years.
7-game spans, averaging 20 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 blocks. He's done it. David Robinson's done it. And Kareem's done it. That's it. That's the list. Not rookies ever. Players in the NBA, period.
Well, and here's the other part about Victor that we haven't really talked about a lot, but we've been around him each enough to sort of see it. And also in part because the team has been so bad, people haven't really seen it. I was reading through the transcript of his interviews after the game tonight. And I dropped a curse word on the court, which it was sort of led to a joking thing. But he talks about, he got asked about Greg Popovich throwing in the ball time and again in the fourth quarter and about whether you are able to deal with being failing as a player, and talked about stuff for a while. Then he said this: I've been through a lot of challenges in my life and my basketball life, so you have to live with this. It is what it is. You want to be great or you don't. Then he got asked later about whether rookie of the year means a lot to him. It's very important to me. And then he goes on to says other things. Yes, individual awards like rookie of the year are very important to me. This is a guy, and I don't mean any of this negatively. This is a guy who, for, as we've all talked about and have seen for a long time, has been trying to be great for years, going back to when he, as Brian has written extensively about, and we've talked about in the pod. This is all stuff he's been dreaming about doing and trying to do since he was a kid. And he has come over here and is living up to the hype and is playing like this and is not afraid to say, yeah, I want the team to win games. I want to win awards. When I was in Indianapolis, he was the one guy who said, I want to be the face of the league. Everybody else, Anthony Edwards, everybody else. Oh, yeah, you know, I don't.
He wanted to win the skills competition and was pissed off that Anthony Edwards was messing around on his team.
Yes. He has legendary talent, and he is determined to live up to it.
Yes, and that's where it's going to be fascinating to see how things progress with the Spurs. Because
interesting real quick, he has played the entire fourth quarter, the last two games, the only full quarters he's played all season long. It's clear. Like, he wants to compete. He wants to compete for the rest of this season and then obviously moving forward.
Well, and let's think real quick. Let's think about the Victor-Chet rivalry, right? Like, Victor's going to win Rookie of the Year, barring an injury. Let's, like, knock on wood. Assuming health, he's going to win Rookie of the Year the way this is going, unless something crazy happens. But he's going to be sitting at home with a team that's going to win 15 games. And Chet Holmgren might have the number one seed in the West, might be in the NBA Finals, probably won't be because they're a young team, but, like, they're going to be in the playoffs, playing meaningful games. He's going to be in the center of all that, and Victor's going to be sitting at home. And I'm sure...
Look, if you're buying stock on a team, if you're saying, hey, the next 5 years, whose future do you like the best? If you're not picking the Thunder first, they're awfully high on that list.
I think it'd be hard not to pick him first. And if you're Victor and you're the Spurs looking at Victor, a guy who's hungry for success in every way, this is not a situation where you could sit back and say, oh, well, you know, we can have a 3 or 4 year slow build and we can casually add pieces like what Shai-Gilgeous Alexander has just gone through in Oklahoma City, right? Like, he was on board with, we're going to add a piece here. And he obviously wasn't this level player early, but there was never any complaining about, we're going to keep drafting players. We're going to keep having young guys. We're not going to go get ready, you know, guys who are going to step up our timeline. We're going to keep methodically putting this thing together. Like, Victor does not seem like the kind of guy that's going to be cool with, yeah, in 3 years, we're going to have a chance to be a really good team. That does not seem like the Victor Wembanyama plan, especially when his biggest rival is on a team that's ready made to be a championship caliber team.
Yeah, that's winning, like you said, 60 the rest games of the a decade. Year for the next 5 years. Right.
That's right.
It related, and obviously small sample size, but Devin Vassell and Jeremy Sochan, their last two lottery picks before Victor, and I would say the two guys who you can feel confident are keepers on the roster outside of Victor, they were both pretty damn good tonight too.
I want to read a quote from Chet, because Victor is a really terrific interview because he is forthcoming and he doesn't speak with an edge, but as you've talked about for months now, Bontemps, he does really have an edge with the way he talks. Chet is not like that. And he recently gave an interview to Joel Lorenzi from the Oklahoman. And he said something that I thought was very important to know about him and understand about him and about how he operates in the game and how he talks to the media, because he doesn't speak very colorfully very often. Mm-hmm. But this quote was very colorful. He said, "I don't even want to say this because it'd be taken the wrong way, but I want to move like a gangster, like LeBron, the way he moves. That's gangster to me. He don't bleep around. He has all his people with him. They handle their business. He handles his." Just watching that and trying to move similar is super important, because at the end of the day, nothing off the court can hurt you more than distractions and bleep around and having something goofy happen. With how focused I am on the court, I don't want anything to take away from that by somebody doing something stupid. So what basically he's saying there is he wants to keep the main thing the main thing. I'll shorten that down for him so he doesn't have
to say things.
And that's how he's operating. And so,
including playing center right from the jump, which is one of the most consequential things the whole season, is that guy walking in and being an awesome center right away and not having to put somebody next to him.
Yeah. And so I just think these two guys are very similar in a way that they're driven, not just that their body size, but they're very driven. They're very competitive.
Yes.
Yeah. They are serious. They are both absolutely serious about handling their business. I think I might have mentioned this. Like, I got a glimpse of Wimby's post-game workout when they're in Dallas, because, you know, the locker room's small. There's not an area except for the hallway. And trust me, that guy is serious about doing everything he can to milk all the potential out of that 7'4", 7'5" frame.
I had a terrific interview when I was in Paris with his physical therapist, I don't know.
I believe that gentleman might be on the Spurs staff now.
He is. His name is Guillerme. And those two guys are all business. And I couldn't have been more impressed with him. I was very, not surprised, but very, I thought it was a very good thing that the Spurs hired him. Mm-hmm. And I know about some of the stuff that Victor does. I don't know a lot about it, but these guys are, you know, he's doing stuff that took LeBron 4 or 5 years in the league to figure out.
And he's doing stuff that there has been a lot of study and science put into every single thing that he does. And I think Chet has a very similar approach. And like, listen, these guys understand they're skinny, but for neither one of these guys, it's not going to be about how much weight can you put on them. Like, no, you don't want either one of these guys to, you know, show up, "Oh, I gained 28 pounds this offseason." It's like they're going to develop their bodies to maximize what they can do as these ridiculous, dominant, floor-stretching rim protectors. They are like, that's a term that didn't even exist until a few years ago. And these guys are going to take that thing to just a completely different stratosphere. You know, I mean, you can talk about like Brook Lopez, he's kind of the first, Miles Turner, Porzingis, especially now that he's accepted that he's a center. These guys are going to take it to a whole new stratosphere because the length, the athleticism, but the skill on both these guys is ridiculous. And then you take into account their competitiveness.
Jackson just posted a photo of Victor doing a split. it was from last summer, but 7'5", and he can do a split. And his mother, Victor's mother, is a fascia therapist, in addition to a basketball coach. I did not know what a fascia therapist was. He had to explain it to me, but it's, and I apologize if I don't exactly have it right, but it's a treatment and study and work on the sort of the membranes of the body, There's all kinds of membranes everywhere. And she has devoted her career to, and I think there's a holistic approach to it. And please don't hold me to all this. I'm not trying to say what it is 100% accurately, but the point is Victor's mother was really interested in tissues and membranes. And Victor, you know, has, in addition to being incredibly healthy eater his whole life, mm-hmm. His mom said that she never made the same meal for her three children twice. I found that hard to believe, as did Victor, but but
that's a lot of meals. I'm just gonna say
it's one of those things where you're like, you're not gonna stop her, but she did say it. She also has a terrific name, Elodie. It's a great name. Anyway, okay, just check out the highlights on this game. Prepare yourself for the Wembanyama era, whether you like it or not.
Well, and prepare yourself for the Wimby Chet era.
Yeah, that's
going to be bad.
And that, to me, has been the point I've been trying to make the whole time, is that it's not – Victor is unbelievable. It's not to take away from Victor. But like you said, McMahon, these guys – this is a real rivalry, and this is a real legitimate rival to this guy. And they have history, and it's like respectful dislike, which is awesome. Yeah. There's no like, yeah, you know, like you said, there's like a hello, we're going to play. And then it's all business.
And they go 48
minutes and it's awesome. And they play the same position. They're in the same division. They're going to be in the same conference for years, going at it in the playoffs, hopefully. Assuming the Spurs get better, which, I mean, they're going to have Victor. They're going to be a good step there.
Can't get worse. Him.
Right.
Yeah. They're fighting for Rookie of the Year now. They're going to be fighting for Defensive Player of the Years in the future. And honestly, they very well could be fighting for MVPs.
Sure.
Now, we'll see if Chet develops. Like, I'm very confident saying Victor's going to be in that conversation. And I think Chet's got a chance.
I mean, Chet's flirting with 50, 40, 80, and 20 points a game as a rookie playing center on a great team with like great numbers across the board. Like he's going to be in the mix for that kind of stuff.
And the other thing people say, well, the durability, that's going to be a big question mark with Chet. And then obviously he misses his whole rookie year because of the foot injury. He has missed a grand total of 0 games this year, which is the same number that he missed at Gonzaga. It's the same number that he missed in high school. This guy is a battler.
And that's the best part. They both want to play. They both mm-hmm. want to play all the time. Like it's awesome. It's just awesome stuff for the league. It's really exciting.
Well, I think it'd be amazing if Chet Holmgren could get a spot on the Olympic team. It doesn't look like that's going to happen, but
we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Center. I can
the
tell
U.S.
You that.
The U.S. needs him, and so it's also potentially going to happen at the Olympics in the future.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. All right, Bontemps,
I was going to say, speaking of Team USA.
You were at the Warriors game at the Garden on Thursday night. The Warriors got that win. Steph Curry broke out of a little slump that he'd been having. just hadn't been shooting the ball really well. You could almost see that coming, happening in the Garden, where he's had some great games in his career, including breaking the three-point record a couple of years ago. He got out to a really good start, and they improved to like I said, 5-1 now since they've moved Klay Thompson to the bench. Klay had another pretty good game. He didn't shoot the ball as well as he has been, but he shot the ball pretty well. And look, the Knicks are still banged up on temps, but the Lakers right now, as we're recording this, pod, are in serious trouble of losing to the Wizards. It's in overtime. If that happens, the Warriors will retake the ninth seat from them. But obviously, the Warriors have been moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, they've been playing better. You know, 7 road wins in a row was certainly a nice thing, especially considering how bad they were on the road last year. It's quite the dichotomy between the two seasons. You know, Jonathan Kuminga had a great game today.
Wow, what a word. Good job.
Well, I have to continue to try to improve your vocabulary. We're going there a word at a time, a day at a time. We're getting there. But, you know, Jonathan Kuminga has made real strides, been a huge thing for the Warriors this year to have him really step into a solidified starting role. Brandon Pajamski been really good. Again, young guy, rookie, stepping into a solidified starting role in the backcourt. You've got Moses Moody now playing in place of Andrew Wiggins. We'll see how long he's away from the team due to some personal reasons. Steve Kerr said he expects him back at some point this season, but did not know when asked about it before the game today. But, you know, for the Warriors, they continue to move in a good direction. And on the other side of things, the Knicks now lost 7 of 9. They look like a tired team, one that's dealt with a ton of injuries and fatigue on top of that, with minutes played because of the amount of injuries they've had and some of Tom Thibodeau's stubbornness, frankly, like playing Josh Hart 47 minutes today in this game, which I don't think was necessary under the circumstances. And now we've talked a lot about how bunched up the West is. In the East, you've got teams 4-6. Well, I guess Miami since lost tonight. So you've got Philly and New York on 25 losses, and then you've got Miami, Indiana, and Orlando all on 26. And you've got both the Sixers and the Knicks dealing with a ton of injuries that are going to be going on here for a while.
Yeah, and with the Knicks, like, you don't know if Julius Randle, like, you don't know when he's coming back, if he's coming back, if he's going to be able to stay on the floor when and if he does come back. And as great as Jalen Brunson has been, like, you need more than one guy who can be a primary creator. And they've really, like, it's a point they really, really need Randle to be in the mix to have any hope of being a real threat.
Yeah, the Knicks have lost 7 of 10, and Miami was right on their heels coming into tonight. Miami lost in Denver, which pushed them back, but they're in serious danger of losing playoff traction. Meanwhile, by the way, as an aside, Philly's been struggling. They're doing okay, but they're
not. They've been getting drilled.
Yeah,
without Embiid on Tim?
7-17.
Okay. They've had a couple of wins recently, but yes, on balance, they've been struggling. New York, like we mentioned, has been struggling. The Cavs are 3-4 in their last 7, and that includes Max Strus hitting a 60-footer.
Don't exaggerate.
They also survived a game right before the All-Star break where Coby White had a potential game winner, a relatively clean look that he missed. So they're 3-4 in the last 7. In a blink of an eye, it could be 1-6. But okay, they're not. But meanwhile, Milwaukee has won 4 in a row. And now Milwaukee has a tough Western road trip coming up. But you know, the composition of the East is has moved around a little bit and continues to move around with some of those teams that had separated themselves, basically, you know, losing more. And that's a huge opportunity for Milwaukee, because they were 4 or 5 games back of the Cavs in the loss column. And now, as we do this pod, they just swept the baseball series with the Hornets. Actually, I think it was a home and home. And now they're 1 game back of the Cavs in the loss column. And
listen, if you can win in Charlotte, you can win anywhere.
That's right. And I believe Milwaukee actually pulled ahead in the tiebreaker for the Cavs against the Cavs tonight. So it's even closer than that.
And if, as long as Embiid's out or not himself, I think that Milwaukee has the best player in the East by a decent margin. Like, Giannis is on a different tier than your Tatums or anybody else you want to bring up.
For sure. for sure. Yeah,
and Milwaukee continues to look like they're polishing off some rough edges. Their defense is improving. They're starting to run some actions that are more familiar with what Dame ran in Portland, and they're making incremental progress. I don't want to go overboard because, like I said, they got a tough schedule coming up, and they could take some losses. They still are weak defensively, but it's worth pointing out.
They're improving defensively. They're better defensively. I mean, it couldn't get a whole lot worse, but they are better.
Bontemps, you've had a long day today. It's 1 a.m. Eastern right now. You this morning or yesterday morning went down to Philadelphia because Joel Embiid spoke for the first time since having surgery on his meniscus. There wasn't a ton of gigantic commentary, but he said some important things. And what did you take away from that?
Yeah, to me, I thought this was a lot like when Julius Randle talked the other day, and we talked about how it sort of, I think, reaffirmed a lot of the stuff that we already suspected about what was going to happen with Julius in terms of his recovery from his shoulder issue and whether he would get back on the court and sort of what that would look like. And I think we've seen in talking to Joel today, I think it did sort of do a lot of the same stuff. Sort of the general belief around the Sixers has been they've been a cautious optimism, if not just flat out optimism, that Joel would play at some point this season. He reiterated that today, said he expects to be back, assuming his rehab continues to go well, on his knee, play at some point this year. And, you know, feels good about where he's at. Wouldn't have done anything differently as far as what happened in the game in Golden State. Said the team had been struggling. He wanted to play, felt like he should play, got out there and played. Said that point, you got to just live with what happened. Admitted it was disappointing with how well he was playing for him to miss some time, but was overall in good spirits. You know, the Sixers, as McMahon referred to, have struggled mightily without Joel. There's some frustration there with the way they've played. Tobias Harris in particular has been a real disappointment with Joel Embiid out. Tyrese Maxey's played well. Tobias has not really stepped in as the second guy in a way they need him to, especially with Joel out of there. And, you know, but all that being said, we talked about all these other injuries in the East and the way this thing is sitting right now. If the Sixers can get to sixth or seventh in the East going into the playoffs and Joel Embiid is healthy, and I think the way this is trending, my expectation is we'll see Joel Embiid sometime in the next month, probably in the later end of that. And if everything goes well and he gets back out on the court a couple weeks before the end of the regular season, gets himself ready for the playoffs, if they're on the opposite side of the bracket as the Boston Celtics when the playoffs start, he and the Sixers are going to feel confident they can beat anybody and make a run. And if they've got a healthy Joel and a healthy Tyrese Maxey with an improved supporting cast around him with Buddy Hield and Kyle Lowry in there in place of Patrick Beverley and, you know, Furkan Korkmaz or Daniel House, whatever guy that was barely in the rotation before, all of a sudden that's a deeper team with shooting around him and some playoff experience, the guys like Batum and other guys who've been in postseason before. Kyle Lowry's obviously won a title with Nick Nurse in Toronto. And they're going to feel confident that they are going to be good enough to make a real run. So, like I said, it was good to see Joel in good spirits today. But more than anything, you got to look at it as it sort of confirmed what the sort of soft hope was, which is that the MVP of the league, at least for a couple more months, is got a chance to be back. And if he's back and live in the fight, like you said, McMahon, he's the one guy that is up there in that tier, obviously, with Giannis. And if he's sitting there in the playoffs healthy, you know, if you're the Cavs in a 2-7 or 3-6 and you see a healthy Joel Embiid sitting there, that's a doomsday scenario, you know. Well, or if you're the Bucks and you get things sorted out and then you're sitting there with a healthy Joel Embiid in a 2-7 matchup, that's certainly a titanic first-round matchup. It's probably the biggest single variable left in a regular season. It's like, when's he going to come back and what's he going to look like when he does?
Well, and obviously there's no point sweating what the Sixers seed is going to be, because they're not going to be a top two or three seed. It's just not going to happen. So whatever it is, 6-7, whatever the case may be. Right. And then it's obviously, does Embiid come back and can he get anywhere near that form that he was in? You know, that, and not even necessarily like more points than minutes, which only Wilt has done, but can he play at an MVP caliber level when he's going to have missed weeks and weeks and weeks? And as you said, probably best case scenario, maybe can get a couple of weeks at the end of the regular season to try to, you know, get back in rhythm, to get his legs back under him. You got to assume it's going to be some conditioning challenges after that sort of a layoff. It's an awfully tough task.
So one of the things people ask me is that, like, there was a kind of a reaction today about that Embiid said he was going to come back. I'm not sure why people think it's controversial that he would come back. I think it's probably an overcorrection from how he looked like he played on a sore knee before he suffered the meniscus tear. But, like, there are people saying to me, like, I can't believe that he might risk it or the Sixers might risk it. If he's cleared to play,
right,
and his knee is healthy, I mean, his knee is never going to be, you know, great. That's, you know, he knows that. Of course he's going to try to play.
He's only going to get so many playoff opportunities during his prime.
Which is what he said today.
Yeah, well, that...
He's going to punt on one if he's cleared to play? That'd be insane.
Well, yeah, I mean, as you said, Brian, Joel Embiid said today, said I've maybe got 20 years to play. So
yeah, I saw that.
Maximize.
I would hope for everybody's sake that he has 20. I don't think he does, but let's hope that he's...
Well, I mean, he's already been in the league for 10, I think. So if he has another 10, that'd be great. Let's have him stick around as long as possible. But I think a lot of this to me is...
He hasn't really been the
correction,
really. He missed two full years.
He missed the first two, but I mean, he was drafted 10 years ago. The point is, I think a lot of that, frankly, is overcorrection from the way people talked about him after that Denver game and going into the Golden State game about him missing that game and all the reaction to that. I'm not playing in Denver yet again. And as I said at the time, and I can say again, I was around the Sixers a lot, obviously, this season. And Joel had been dealing with knee issues in that knee for 2 months. And even after the game when he scored 70, he had a wrap on his knee the size of most people's waists after the game. So it's not like it was the first time he had been dealing with something. And if you are wanting to be, like, again, I agree with you, McMahon, him trying to get ramped up after the injury is going to be a pretty important thing. And it could be a pretty pivotal thing, especially if they don't get into the play and they stay in that sixth spot. You get that full week after the regular season to, like, really get him in condition. That would be good. But the other thing is, if you want to try to look at it from a positive standpoint, this is the guy who was doing all those things, scoring 70 and scoring 30 and 10, we put up 30 and 10 every night on a knee that was bothering him all the time. If he comes back and the knee feels good, like, that could certainly counteract some of the time he was out from, if you're talking about a rust versus feel standpoint. So hopefully, you know, more than anything, we just get to see him on the court.
I didn't think it was any sort of surprise that he said if he's cleared, he's playing in the playoffs and he's playing down this, like, as soon as he gets cleared, he wants to come back. I wasn't there. You were, obviously. Reading it, it seemed like he still expressed a strong commitment to playing for Team USA in the Olympics.
He got asked if he's going to play, and he said, if I'm healthy, I'm going to play. But let's see what happens over the next 2 months. I think if he doesn't come back and play this season, you know, if he has a setback, I doubt he's going to go play for Team USA. I mean, maybe he would then. I don't know. But, like, there's a lot of road to run between March 1st and whatever, August 1st or whenever, July 28th or whenever the Olympics start. So let's get to the end of the regular season. Let's hopefully have the big fella be back on the court. Let's have him have a healthy playoff run and then figure out whether he's going to play for Team USA. But he did get asked, and he did say, if I'm healthy, I'm going to play.
I'd like to give Daryl Morey some truth serum and get his thoughts on Embiid playing for Team
USA. Pretty sure he'll say whatever makes Joel happy works for me.
That's truth serum is the key word there. I guess it's two words.
Yeah, well, Daryl Morey and truth, it's a complicated situation. Chris Paul just became another player to fillet him about.
Oh, CP3's been doing that since the minute he landed in Oklahoma City. That's
by the way.
It's just he's going back over that same territory.
Right. Chris Paul and Dwayne Wade were on a podcast the other day, and they were talking about – they were telling a story about how it had to be 2011 when Chris Paul ended up getting traded to the Clippers, famously, that the Heat had tried to trade for Chris Paul. And they went and they were laughing and smiling the whole way through this discussion, but they were joking about who would get number three, because Dwayne Wade, incumbent number three, and CP3, obviously. And they were joking that the reason the trade didn't happen was because Dwayne refused to give up his number and Chris wouldn't change his number, and so the trade didn't happen. And then many people, maybe aggregators,
maybe
believe that that was a true story, that that was the why the trade didn't happen. And hello, don't be ridiculous. Of course, that wasn't the reason the trade didn't happen. That is, I feel sort of silly to say this, but like, I thought like everybody was just in on the joke. And then I was looking, and then some people that I like, you know, respect were like, can you believe that they did, that Chris Paul didn't go to Miami because he wouldn't wear number three? And I was like, no, I can't believe that. So we can move that aside. I'll just say two things about that real quick. Number one, I'm sure that he did have some discussions when Chris Paul was made available, because that's what the Heat do. The number that they had to deal with was not number three. The number was David Stern's cell phone number, because David Stern was deciding who was getting traded. And, you know, I'm not sure how he would have felt about that. Number two, the trade that would have taken for David Stern to approve it would have been Chris Bosh. And the Heat were not trading Chris Bosh for Chris Paul. They did not, we were not going to trade the guy who they were about to make their franchise center, which is what happened that basically that year, for another guard. So sorry, just to go on that little rant. By the way, speaking of LeBron, the Lakers did beat the Wizards in overtime.
Wizards.
They
nothing, literally nothing but L's in February. They are the Lizards until they get a W.
Well, you're speaking of the end of February, which we are now in March. Oh, yeah. A month has ended. And that means, Mr. McMahon, it is your time to shine.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
Cajones Factor Player of the Month. It ain't going to be Kyle Kuzma. He missed a three there at the end that would have sent it into double OT. But we've got a decent crop this month. Good enough to where, boys, I'm going to go with an honorable mention.
Oh, okay.
Paolo Banchero.
Oh.
Yeah, you know it. Hey.
Might have been a travel.
They didn't blow the whistle. They did not blow the whistle. Correct. And that last two-minute report is always accurate. Said it was an accurate call.
CNC.
CNC, baby. Game-winning and-one jumper in the last second over Jalen Duren. And boys, he got a little verklempt, a little emotional in the on-court interview afterwards. But I tell you what, nothing wrong with a man shedding some tears. And I've been told by the IT department, I better not make fun of this. And I certainly want to continue to enjoy her services, so I'm not going to poke any fun at it. I've been getting lectures about toxic masculinity and things like that. So the man was emotional about it. And listen, I might shed a few tears if I hit a game winner in the last second too. So he gets the honorable mention.
All right.
The brass.
I like your personal growth aspirations there.
Yes. EQ, all kinds.
Aspirations are the key word there. Aspirations.
Emphasis on ass.
Just emphasis on hopefulness.
Jackson wants to know if men under 5'10 can shed tears.
Absolutely. Listen, Jackson, men of all sizes, let the waterworks flow, baby. It's okay. It is okay. I cry every time I turn on the Zoom and see Bontemps up your face. So you can too. Oh, damn it. I was lectured on not calling you ugly anymore, too. I'm sorry, Bontemps. I'd like to apologize.
You're also not sorry, so it's okay.
I am sorry. I apologize.
My life is good.
On with my life is good. Also, I don't want to draw the wrath of the beautiful K-Bon.
That's the much bigger issue than me. Trust me.
Exactly. Brass / bronze. Steph Curry. 26 points in 19 clutch minutes. And boys, you remember February 10th. The catch, the pivot.
Oh.
The cash from 29 feet to beat the Suns.
Max Struess laughs at 29 feet.
Listen, don't you be all right, doing sorry. Any spoilers here. Sorry, don't sorry, you sorry. Be doing it. Let Steph enjoy his moment in the sun. He doesn't get very many of them, so let him enjoy this moment.
That's right. It's been a rough go for Steph.
Okay. Very rough. Staying in California, just a little bit down the road from the Bay, going to Sactown, baby. De'Aaron Fox. Listen, the Kings have kind of been scuffling. They needed some cojones from the reigning clutch player of the year. Man, his clutch stats this month, 34 points, 13 and 19 from the floor, 6 assists in 23 minutes. I mean, he did some.
Whoa, that's back to basics, baby. 13 and 19.
He did some.
Not happy about missing the All-Star.
Cooking. And listen, actually going right into the All-Star game, they had that road win over the Nuggets. And the Nuggets might have been kind of coasting to the break, but still, a road win in Denver, you're doing something right. He had buckets on 5 straight possessions, starting with 2:02 left to go from down 1 to up 7 in that game. Then he comes out of the break, and it was the Spurs, and they shouldn't have been down late in the game, but they were. He hits the go-ahead 3 with 1:21 remaining in that. And like I said, his stats were just ridiculous. So De'Aaron Fox, the silver for Coney's Factor Player of the Month. And Wendy, it's not just the gold. It's the wine and gold, baby. The wine and gold. Max Struess. And this is basically off a 1-game sample size. But you know what? When that 1-game sample size is you come back from 10 points in the final 3:42, and one dude goes 5 of 5 from 3-point range in that span and puts the exclamation points with a 59-foot buzzer beater, that's going to get you cojones factor. Player of the Month, which really might be, aside from the contract, the crowning achievement of Max Struess's career.
Well, that was quite a performance against the Dallas Mavericks, who have been almost unbeatable for the month of February, I might add, too. So that was a key factor. Another winning performance from you, McMahon. Great work.
Appreciate it, fellas. Your support is always appreciated. It makes me feel warm and fuzzy.
Bob, we like when you talk about
for me. No?
No.
Okay, go on.
We like when you talk about your feelings, McMahon. Please continue to explore that.
Working on it, boys.
All right, it's time to wrap this up. Thank you to Mr. Bontemps. Thank you to Mr. McMahon. Thank you to Jackson.
All right, get out of here.
Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective Podcast, and we will talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.